Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbroadcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates.
I'm a dingle bat.
How about that? Yeah. Hello and welcome to Two in the Think Tank, the show where we come up with five sketch
ideas.
Okay, right. Now let's do that as a round, okay? Hello and welcome to Two in the Think Tank, the show where we come up with five sketch ideas.
Was that it?
All right, no. Well, you've got to come in after hello and welcome to Two in the Think
Tank. Yeah.
Hello and welcome to Two in the Think Tank, the show where we come up with five sketch ideas.
Podcast where we come up with five sketch ideas.
Perfect. And a partridge in a pear tree.
Andrew, I think we should point out to the listeners why maybe the sound might be different today.
It's because we've made it. We've
made it, and by it we mean a booking error. And we weren't able to get into the podcast studio, so we're using a Zoom and two lapel mics.
Lapel mics, and we're sitting in the big film studio downstairs.
Yeah.
So, it's probably got... It could have a bit of echo, a bit of reverb.
But, you know, obviously, the stupid old studio sound... film studio has got great sound properties. And obviously, don't book with this company if you're worried about that kind of thing.
If it sounds different, that's because it's better.
Yeah, and that's if you're looking for a unique sound for your videos or anything, book with Stupid Old Studios.
Anything that's different, it could be better. Yeah. You don't know.
That's right? True. Well,
especially with stuff like audio or if bands, they'll go to huge effort to like record with analog equipment and reel to reel and, you know, special old microphones and like...
And this is all just what your brother George does.
My brother George. The producer of this podcast.
He goes
editor.
For that different sound.
Yeah.
You don't know the amount of processes he puts our podcast through, reel to reel, old mics, puts us in a big, weird studio.
He gets a studio band in.
Absolutely.
They don't do anything, but they just sit there and listen.
Yeah, and it's nice. And I think that kind of deadens the sound a little bit. Mm. It's quite good. Off the waves bouncing off these concrete walls.
Yeah, they really just absorb.
Just a bunch of guys holding brass instruments. Mm.
Yeah, yeah. I tell you what this has done, Alistair.
What's that?
Now there's no microphone to, like, obstruct my view of you.
Yeah.
And, like, there's no table between us. I can, like, get a full body shot.
Of me.
Of Alistair. I'm drinking it in.
I think the parts usually...
With my mouth.
Yeah, I think the parts normally where the mic obscures your face and body, that's where my imagination can run
wild.
You know? And I can allow myself to come up with sketch ideas in that space. Now I don't have any of that available space. So
I can't see Andy's lower chin. I mean, now imagine what a fantastic sketch idea could be written on it.
There could be some amazingly disgusting bodily thing going on that chin.
Yeah.
And that's why where my ideas come from. A lot of people ask me, where do I get my ideas from? It's from the gaps where I can't see Andy's chin.
I mean, that's quite Lovecraftian.
Mm.
You know, in that, like, the horror takes over in the spaces that you can't see and in the, in the unknown. And
I wonder if you could train kids to be...
I don't think it's possible.
You raise them rather than to think that there's fear in the unknown, but make them think that there's something else, maybe hope.
Or lunch.
Lunch. Yeah, I guess if you go more specific, you know, people say when you're setting goals,
yes,
you should aim for something specific.
I think, like, as we know more and more stuff, right? Like, we've established more and more. There's less unknown. Mm. Is there less unknown now? I don't know. That's one of the things where there's more unknown.
No, well, there's less unknown, but we're more aware of the amount of unknown that we have.
Right.
Which makes it seem like there's more unknown.
Right. There's back in the day, there was underreporting of the unknown. Mm. And now people are really standing up and saying, I'm not sure about this huge range of things. And that's why it seems like there's more.
But then again, there is more stuff happening.
Yes.
You know, I think, and as more stuff happens, I guess there is that becomes more unknown.
Do you think there is more stuff? There's more stuff happening.
I guess.
I think that's really.
Do you think that's really judging early universe quite poorly?
I think just the idea of like how much stuff is happening and trying to measure it and report back on the amount of stuff that's happening could be a sketch idea.
Yeah, I think that
I think like even just like a part of the news, like a report at some point, you know, where are we at on the stuff happening
at
scale?
The moment, yeah.
Because
what's going on?
At the moment, a lot of scales are quite judgmental. They go into the quality of things that are happening. Are things good or bad? You know, are things dangerous?
Yeah.
But now we're going for a scale that is just the amount.
Sort of like a travel warning.
Yeah.
Be careful. There's heaps going on. Now, that could be good, though.
That could be good.
We're not...
Hey,
we're
be not careful not to miss out on it.
Yeah, that's right. Opportunity for FOMO is at maximum rating. Maximum. Okay. I mean, I think we need to go deeper into this.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Okay. Well, Then, like, is this an organization? Is this the International Institution for Measurement, right? And they have all these specific metrics that go into, like, water, you know, rainfall and incidences of breaking and entering. But then they aggregate all their metrics together into one overall report of the amount of stuff that's happening.
Yeah. And so, like, let's say they're... They go to the people who are measuring the intensity of the UV rays, right? And they say, are there UV rays happening? And they go, yes. And then they notch up one like that. So they don't care about the value judgments of those reports. But they can be an aggregator of knowledge. You know, obviously when incidences of break-ins go up,
those are things that are happening.
But then also when no break-ins are happening, that's also kind of something else.
Because break-ins are down.
Yeah, break-ins are down, but then there's also something happening in its place.
Yeah.
Like a lack of break-ins, which is something.
Yeah. Does that mean that the amount of stuff that's happening, it could be a constant, right?
But because... what about when more people are born? Oh, no, that's true, but... Wait, but can more things... I mean, if it's a constant, then...
That's fascinating.
That is fascinating.
Right? If we could find out that the amount of things that are happening in the universe is a constant and find out whatever that number is, I don't know how we'd measure it. Maybe you could do a like a sample, right? And you just look at a box full of cheese... biscuits.
Yeah, great.
Right?
That's what I was going to say.
You work out how much stuff is happening in that box full of cheese biscuits, and then you treat that as a sample of the universe. And then you expand. It doesn't feel like it's a representative sample, though, does it?
Well,
like,
I mean, it feels like... I think any sample that you have will seem like it's not a representative sample. I guess,
and that's a thing that's happening.
Yeah, that's a thing. Right, one down! Like that. Well, I was going to say, I mean... If we're gonna have to get some philosophers in on this group to sort of check, but like, do you think if new molecules are coming into the universe from another place, do you think that could increase the amount of stuff that's happening? Because is the absence of stuff happening?
Yes.
Equal to the same thing as one stuff happening?
I guess that is. The philosophers, because I think something not happening, it can only happen in one way. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, but then there's other things, like, you know, like when there's not a break-in, right? Yeah. Let's say
there's people enjoying peaceful time at home.
That's right,
which they can do,
you know,
in a variety of ways.
You know, eddy currents.
Yes,
there's wind. You know, there'd still be wind, but I guess there's also wind while the person's still breaking in. I guess if you're breaking in, you're not stopping the wind.
I think breaking in, if anything, causes more drafts.
That's true.
You know, because of the breaking.
Oh, yeah.
And the in.
Yeah, that's right. The innard.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think that we can safely assume that when there's a break-in, more things are happening than when there's not a break-in.
Yep.
Unless, and here's again... Unless there was gonna be like a surprise party,
right?
Right. But as the group of people arrive to the surprise party,
yes.
They see somebody breaking into the house,
right?
And then they go, maybe we shouldn't go in right now. We should let him finish.
Yes.
And then they cancel the
surprise.
And they realize he's taking ages, and Martin's gonna be here.
Yes.
And then they're like, oh, well, maybe we should cancel the surprise party. Because he's already going to get a surprise. I think it would be too many surprises. And so then, does that reduce, like, does that increase the amount of things happening or reduce the amount of things happening?
Oh, I mean, for Martin, it feels like...
Or is that a one-to-one or is it because there's like 10 people involved in the surprise party? Is that kind of 10 things happening? Because they all have inner lives, possibly rich.
Rich inner lives.
Yeah. And they're all women.
Yeah, except for Martin. Martine?
No, I think Martin can be a woman's name.
Okay, great. Alistair, I think we just write this down as a sketch. And we
Stuff happening rating.
Stuff happening rating. I think what I'm most interested in myself is whether or not there is a constant or a ceiling to the amount of things that can happen.
Yeah.
You know, if we could work out how many things can happen, maybe, are we maxing it out as more things happen? Are we approaching that?
But also, how would you measure it? Like, is it maximum things happening in this universe? Or then are you finding, like, is there a things happening density? Like, you know, like
that's interesting.
Per unit of, you know,
yeah.
Matter or space-time? Or are you having to, you know, look at...
Per unit of space-time?
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah, what do you reckon the fundamental unit of space-time is?
Isn't it like it's a thing, right? Like it's like this weird intertwining
is
of
it?
Space and time?
Oh, great.
I don't know. Look, I flipped over some New Scientist pages and it looked real complicated. It looked like it was a double helix, maybe. Maybe a triple helix, I'm not sure. It could have been a single helix.
Right, of space-time. Because I think that like the unit of space-time could be something like, you know, probably about the size of like a mini car or something like that. You know, that's the size that anything really good could probably happen in. Anything really,
is
you know,
a small car.
Yeah,
I guess you can have a sing-along.
Yeah,
you
exactly.
Sort of, you can have you know, sort of partake in intercourse.
Mm.
I guess you can give birth.
Yeah, it
probably comes after the intercourse.
Sure.
This is, I guess we're discussing a group of people who live in a car. You can live in a car. Anything you can live in.
Yes.
Is, you know, obviously this is very human-centric.
Yeah.
But anything you can live in is an appropriate unit of space-time.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess on the human scale. I mean, a cockroach could live in a sort of a matchbox.
Sure, but they need people around to, like, leave food and stuff like that. I think that, like... Because you've got the quantum, you've got the tiny little scale, right? And then you've got the cosmic.
Got quantum,
but like,
cosmic.
Both of those don't feel relevant.
That's
so, like,
true.
I'm talking like a relevant unit of space-time.
Yeah, sort of like an SI,
like
an SI unit of space-time?
Yeah. You know, like that you could keep at a institute in France.
Yeah, great. I mean, look, I think it's about time that we have some kind of standard thing here in Australia. You know, they've got that in the Institute of France. They got like that 1 kilo block or whatever, where they're like, all right, this is what a kilo block is, and in London or whatever, in Greenwich, they have the time thing.
Yep.
Right. Well, we need a thing.
An Aussie one. So, what do we got in there? We've got the fuck ton.
The fuck ton.
You know, we've got a.
Yeah.
We've got the SI unit of a fuck ton.
Yeah.
Just a stack of slabs of beer.
Then up in Queensland, we got the buttload. This is it's one sort of standard butt. filled.
Do you think the butt load is a literal thing, though? Like the amount that you could fit in a butt?
I think so. Yeah, I think it's got to be. It's like a foot.
But people talk about a butt load being a lot.
Yeah. I think it's crammed full.
It's, yeah, okay. Yeah. It's backed up and it's dense as well.
Mm.
Right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's densely packed.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a full... Yeah, it's a full load.
You couldn't get any more in.
Yeah, well, and if you could, congratulations. I didn't really have anything to say, I just started. All right, look, I'm going to write the idea of the...
Yeah, okay, the Australian Institute of Quantities or scientific units. Yeah, but then there's other things like... that I would like there to be a unit of, right? A standard unit of, like... of interest, you know? So we know how interesting something is, for example, okay? So what would be the standard unit of interest? Something that would just make you go, oh,
right?
Because that feels like the, you know, that'd be like the click on the Geiger counter of something being interesting is somebody going, oh.
Yeah.
So what is that? That is, I guess, the standard unit of interest would be like someone that you went to high school with, having a baby.
Yeah, I guess that's good. I was going to say it's a place that keeps Leonardo DiCaprio's age, right?
Yeah, so it's finding out Leonardo DiCaprio's age is the standard. Like, you know, that's...
He looks younger.
Yeah.
But
he has been around for a long time, I guess that makes sense.
Yeah. And then there's just this institute behind a glass, in a glass cabinet. They just keep it there, you know, just on a little, on a thing. But it's like really accurate. It's really accurate to sort of 6 decimal points.
What, his age?
Yeah. You know, they've done the most amount of research.
But see, what I worry is that is going to be, that's going to change how interesting that is over time. You know, like you want something that's pretty fixed. I guess the person you went to high school with having a baby is going to change universal. As well. Yeah, like when you're both 69.
Yeah, and I think the fact that there's now an institute where a place that you can visit definitely increases the interest in Leonardo DiCaprio's age.
And that is true. Well, that's the act of observing changes the thing that's observed.
So now, by trying to stick away from cosmic and quantum, we've now gotten involved in the quantum again.
Yeah, it's pretty... we've made it macro. We've made it relevant.
Yeah, absolutely.
I like that. I like that so much. You know, the fundamental unit of interest, the fundamental unit of enjoyment, I think the fundamental unit of enjoyment is the first sip of a soft drink, a can of soft drink.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah, or that first glug of a wine bottle as you start pouring it out. You that glug, glug, glug,
oh,
glug,
yeah.
Glug, glug, glug.
Yeah.
That sound?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, but those are interesting because they feel like, yeah, that's great. That's like I don't know what I'm trying to say. But I do know what you mean. That is a good glug. And I like a series of glugs as well. But I don't want to suggest that I like drinking to excess. Or something like that, because obviously I don't approve.
I just want to picture, just going back to, let's say, the opening up this Leonardo DiCaprio of, like, you know, fundamental, is it fundamental unit of interest? Sort of. It feels like it's a place that would be, you could open up and say, in Bathurst, right? Because it would be have to be a place that you sort of, you really go on a, you have to, you're like, should we go see the Museum of Interest? Or whatever, and they, you know, but you know, apparently they have the building block on which every bit of interesting things are kind of based off of. You know, what's interesting is kind of defined by this place worldwide. You know, and it'd be Bathurst is kind of like a small enough town that, you know, it's at the moment it's kind of just famous for its
a car race,
right? And I think it could be a little bit like, let's say we open that up there, and maybe in the next 2-3 years, okay? We open it up, it's just a small kind of shack. It's no different to like a like a, you know, who's that, the girl who hid in the thing during the Nazis in Holland?
Anne Frank.
Yeah, so it's like visiting Anne Frank's house or something like that. It's just a small house, little museum. It talks about interest, things like that. You go in there, and then the final kind of real final exhibit before you go through the gift shop. Yeah. Is just the glass cabinet, yeah, and things like that. And
I think it's done with an atomic clock.
Yeah, atomic clock, absolutely.
I think actually an atomic clock reading of how old Leonardo DiCaprio is, like accurate to the highest level of accuracy that anything's ever been recorded, is something that would win, say, the Turner Prize in art. You know, you just put that up there. It's just a digital reading to, like, you know, 50 decimal places on a wall.
Yeah.
It's always increasing. You're like, that's a fucking
Turner
Prize.
There's all this information there about, like, different ways that they would try to confirm how old he is. Like, they showed there's, like, a flake of skin in a sort of, like, in a little Petri dish kind of, like, thing where they carbon dated him. You know, yep. And they've, you know, just different ways in which, the, you know, they were attacking this problem to get to the most accurate thing they probably could.
You know, they asked him.
They probably looked at some documents.
Yeah, documents.
You know, and they
spoke to the doctor.
They probably even did some of their own independent research.
Sure.
Looking at, you know, because obviously they're writing this down. They're not thinking it's that important at the hospital when they're writing it down, exactly how specific and, you know, like the time that they write down is.
Yeah,
they're probably checking the clock a minute or two after. They're looking at standard deviations of how long it takes usually for a doctor after a birth to write down what the exact time was, and factor in those errors into the calculation of the Leo birth time.
Yeah.
Anyway, but then I was also
thinking of mathematicians
about how this would probably change the town of Bathurst. You know, which I guess is already kind of a university town, but it's also, you know, it's also got that strong blue collar element to it. So it's a big, inland city.
I think it is. Yes, I think what I would struggle with if I lived in Bathurst is that it probably is quite a boring place. Certainly, that's what it seems like to me from the outside.
You know,
extremely
and
boring.
Apologies to any Bathurstians. Bathursty.
but
so this would kind of like, it would change the type of tourist that goes there. It might bring in tourists. You know, at the moment it's rev heads and car people, and then suddenly, you know, like, sort of, there's more, you know, people are opening up cuisine, like, you know, degustation restaurants near the place
People go look at that, and then they can go and have some food and know exactly how interesting it was.
Yeah.
Right? Oh. When you've got that fresh, you calibrate your brain and then you go and have an experience. If you like to know things numerically.
That's right. And there would be a whole industry that would build around there based on things being interesting. Now that you've seen what a standard unit of interest is,
yes,
why not take this person to the extreme and flood their senses? Like some kind of, like what about a room that you go into?
Yes.
That is bright with colors and loud with sound,
yeah,
you know, possibly a variation of sound.
Right.
Low, high, middle.
Yes.
Smell.
Your mum's in there describing your birth.
Memory. Balance, you know, the room's on a tilt. The room's on two tilts. Each foot is on a different tilt, right? It's the opposite of sensory deprivation.
Somebody's in there explaining exactly how big the different organs of a blue whale are. Now, that's interesting.
That's right, yeah. It's flooding the mind with interest, and it's like it's an experience. Because, you know, I think the reason why we enjoy getting drunk, or possibly some people do enjoy taking drugs. I know you don't, Andy. I know you've not really...
I've just never been given the opportunity.
That's right, you know. I mean, obviously, you know, a person who, you know, let's say is involved in sort of self-help and goal-setting things, they would say, you got to make your own opportunities.
Sure, right? Sure, you're right. You've got to brew your own meth.
Yeah. But, you know, the reason a lot of these things are popular is because people just kind of want to feel like they're losing control. And being flooded with, like, losing control through interesting things, or just at least being flooded with interest.
Is there a risk, though, that you would burn out whichever gland in the brain it is that feels interest? And after that point, you just would no longer be interested in things, or you'd build up such a resistance to...
Well, there's a chance that maybe what I'm confusing with interest is just sensory overload. So maybe, you know, this would start out like...
You don't find flashing lights fascinating?
I mean, look, it could be, they could be images, and you know, they could just, maybe it's like an image, just zoom, like, but it's full 3D projection of you just zooming in closer and closer to matter until you actually see... like atoms and then quarks and you know, and then it's but you can see what they look like,
yeah,
right,
yeah, and they tell you who really did the JFK assassination.
That's right, yeah. and you find out how you're gonna die.
Yeah. Oh, that is interesting. That is really interesting.
Yeah.
That is probably, do you reckon, like, exactly how and when you're gonna die is the most interesting?
It's pretty interesting.
I have to say, I'm intrigued.
Yeah, it's so interesting that you think maybe I don't want to.
My curiosity.
I might not. It's so interesting. It might flood my interest gland and everything might seem dull and actually kind of sad.
All right, Alistair. Mm. Just to totally change the conversation.
Yeah.
When you mentioned Bathurst, the car race before.
Yeah.
How about this? Right. It's a car race.
Mm.
But it's a car race only for parents, right? And before, like, the timer starts, but before you can get in the car, you've got to get out of the house.
Okay.
Right?
So it's similar.
So it's exactly Bathurst,
mm-hmm. Okay.
But everyone starts, everyone has a little, on the start line, or yeah. maybe in the pit lane there or something, everyone has a little, all the parents,
yeah.
all the drivers are parents, they have a little house
yeah.
with their family.
Mm-hmm.
The lights change or the gun fires or whatever, but then everybody, you've got to get out of the house before you can get into the car.
Okay, right. And does everybody have 2.5 children?
Everybody's got 2.5 kids, so you, obviously that one that's half,
it's
you've
weird.
Got to like mop up all the mess and like
yeah, it's really hard to get them to put either their shirt or pants
back
on.
Intestines back into the hole.
Yeah. Okay. And so, but it's... But they're racing then with the kids in the car?
I don't know. I don't know that the kids necessarily... You've just got to, like, pat them... Because I don't feel good about kids being in the car. It doesn't feel safe. The kids are going to go off... Kids have got to maybe get on a bus or something.
Yeah. Okay. So you got to get... Maybe you can just... You get them into a car seat.
Yes.
But it's not the car seat that you're driving
with. Great. Just...
So then at the end of the race, you get to find out... Whether if you crashed or not, whether or not it was a good idea that you didn't pack the kids.
Whether or not your kids died.
Yeah, and so you get to feel great relief that, let's say, you didn't pack them.
Yeah.
Or really cocky that you could have done it with your kids in the car.
I mean, if the kids are in the car, it just does make it more interesting, right? Because you
Absolutely.
Really are getting a bit of a... Because as it is with car racing... I don't feel like you learn very much about the values of the person in the car.
That's true, yeah.
They can't really express what's important to them in any significant way.
And then do you get maybe like extra time or handicap if you sort of come across as a bad dad or bad person who doesn't value the lives of his family?
Well, I mean, maybe it doesn't reflect whether or not you win the race or otherwise, but it'll certainly impact the mind of the viewer.
Because let's say the mother's driving,
yes.
right? And she's taken the corners a little bit too fast. And so
she's going to be judged very harshly by society.
She's going to be judged harshly by society. But then also, if the dad, let's say the kids are yelling out, they want to listen to the, you know, the teeny tiny Stevies, right?
Yep.
They want to listen to that CD. And if the dad can't find the CD in the car, then that's also, you know, he's in the passenger seat trying to ruffle through. He's losing points.
Well, I guess if you have to get the kids out of the car at the end, then what takes place inside the car is going to impact their behavior and how well behaved they are going to be to get them out of the car at the end and say that's the finish line now. It's the daycare centre front door is now the finish line. You know, so I feel like all of that feeds in.
Yeah, I think maybe, but like the thing that really gets you ahead is actually that you're having a good time together. So the better the time that you're all having together, right? So the better, the greater the memories that you've created, maybe the most, you know, great Instagram snippets that you can get out of it that are maybe funny and fun.
How about this? The race isn't over until your deathbed and we see how many of your kids show up.
And if your kids show up before other people's kids,
you win. Yeah, exactly.
And how long it takes your kids to show up. If they show up in a timely manner, it's a really long race. All right, I'm going to write this down somehow. It's really complicated.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's...
But you know, life is complicated.
Exactly,
Andy.
Yeah. It's the...
So instead of the Bathurst 3000...
Yeah, it's the Bathurst family values.
I think this will be big amongst the Christian community.
Because driving in itself isn't really anything.
No.
Right? It's meaningless. It's a form of transport to get you from one place to another.
Yeah.
So just by measuring the driving, we're not actually engaging with what it is that driving provides us.
I mean, people tell us that sports and probably motorsports are about having a good time. It's not about winning or losing. But there is no sport that measures how much of a good time you're having. And I think that that's about time that...
I think motorsports are the one where that least applies. No one is watching the race and being like, well, at least they look like they're having a good time.
Yeah, that's right. And so I think that that's why that's the first sport that we should introduce. That the people who win are the people who have the best time. And as a family... is the most difficult time place to have a good time.
Yeah, yeah. So we're increasing the difficulty there.
Yeah, and yeah, the stakes are higher. Mm. It's in the most difficult sport to have a good time, and it's in the most difficult scenario and dangerous scenario.
And dangerous for that family.
Yeah, for that family. But also, you got to be the fastest.
Oh yeah, sure. I mean, otherwise, what's the point?
Yeah, so it's a fastness to good time ratio.
Mm, you divide the two at the end, and then we see who comes up with the highest.
Which one do you think you'll divide by the other? So then if you divide the good times per minute, you know, or per second, or is it minute per good time?
I actually think neither of them work because you want the good time to be a high number and you want the time to be a low number, right? So you want to divide good time by the amount of time it took you and then...
Great.
So, yeah.
Well, then we found a way to make it sense. So it's good times...
Per second.
And that's how you win. I mean...
I mean, what it is, it is a genuine challenge to have a good time, especially when you're in a hurry.
I think this is one of those sports that could maybe start as a video game, you know?
Okay,
I think
interesting.
It's, you know, that's the
one
way
of
that
those
you could...
sports. Yeah, I know the ones you mean.
Well, I mean, I think I'm establishing a new type of sport.
New genre.
Yeah, it's a new genre that in order to prove to people that it can work.
Do they have genres of sport?
I wonder. There's... sort of sport noir.
Yeah. Mystery sport.
Yeah. Detective sports.
I think these are all the same kind of sports.
I don't know about detective sports. I guess they're all the kind of sports. They're just played by different people.
Anyway, sorry, you were saying something else there.
I think the mystery sport would be somebody's won and you've got to figure out who by playing the sport.
Yeah. Yeah. How does that work?
I guess it could just be that it's they're all determinists that are. It's the philosophy that you play the sport with.
That matters.
Yeah, everybody who plays it is very deterministic. So they think that the world, what happens in the universe, has already been determined, and they just have to let it happen. And whether they try or not, doesn't. like how much they try doesn't really matter because that's how much they were always going to try.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you don't have to apply yourself any further than you really need to.
But then do they end up applying themselves at all? Do determinists still...
They can and they can't, or can't.
But it's like, I can't imagine believing that, like thinking that whatever you do is what you are always going to do, and then doing anything. Isn't it? Well, right? Yeah, are there people who are actually determinists, really, deep down, like functionally determinists?
But then what if you feel like doing something?
I guess the fact that
doing things and trying is still can be fun.
That's true.
You know, and then once you get that in your mind, well, you go, well, then maybe I feel like trying a bit because I find that fun.
Yeah, I guess the amount that you were going to enjoy yourself, is that affected by knowing that that was how much you were going to enjoy yourself?
Yeah, I think all it really affects is that you don't feel any joy for winning or losing.
Right. Right.
But I don't know if walking around a soccer field while other people run around and just being like, whatever, it doesn't matter. I don't know if that you would end up having the most amount of fun out of that. So.
Or the longest soccer career.
Yeah, but in a deterministic world.
I think a soccer team in which one of the players, or possibly all the players, are determinists.
Yeah.
Maybe the coach is a determinist, so his pump up speech is like, whatever happens out there, boys, remember it was always gonna happen.
Yeah. Now, only apply yourself the amount that you were always gonna apply yourself. Because the universe, what happens at the end of the universe was determined in the very first seconds when it began.
At the Big Bang. Yeah. Remember, this has already been written.
These are the things that I was always going to say.
We're all just following a script.
All right, now go out there and do what was planned that you were going to do. At the instant the Big Bang happened.
Look, that's, yeah. I think, how does that tie into, because like, does that tie into like the anthropogenic theory of the universe? That like, that this is the universe that we're in because we're in this universe, you know?
Yeah. So.
I just like to tie that into the speech somehow, if that's.
But is it? Are you talking about that idea where like people ask, well, why are all the things?
Yeah.
Like, why are all the universal constants set at such a way
that life is possible?
Yeah, life is possible, but the only way that you could observe a universe is in one in which the universal constants are at this. Yeah, I mean, look, you know.
Chuck it in
like,
there.
I mean, they're just throwing... You can throw in a lot of deep kind of like...
Sciencey-sounding.
Or at least deep sort of first-year philosophy kind of ideas, you know? Yeah. Or stoner kind of philosophy. Remember, guys! The universe...
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Universal constants are specifically finely tuned for, you know, you're going to want to feel passion when you see how finely tuned this universe is for life, but you got to remember that you only could have emerged in a life. And so try not to feel too much out there because whether you win or lose, it was always going to happen.
Yeah. Right. And the opposition.
Yeah. And the opposition. Yeah. They're going to try to.
But their efforts are futile. They can't change the outcome of the match as much as you can.
Yeah. Go out there, win or lose, it doesn't really matter. It's been decided billions of years ago that we're going to get ice cream after the match anyway.
And if this speech makes you feel like not trying, well, there was nothing I could do about it. Anyway, sorry, I hope we didn't try your patience. We went on a bit about that, and I hope that that didn't...
I hope that the fun that we were having whilst doing that didn't entirely bore you. If it did, it was always going to happen. So, I was listening to a podcast, and there was a thing where the guy was talking about, he was a biologist, and he was talking about these creatures that one of their tactics for... you know, not getting eaten or not getting, for avoiding conflict is like, let's say an insect that blends, it can blend into its background.
Yes.
Right. Which is a great tactic, but, is a difficult tactic. I think as you get bigger, you have to move around more because you got to get more resources. So that definitely affects you in that way. But then there's also the part where if you, want to breed, you also have to make yourself more visible, because if you're hidden, then that affects your
chances of finding a mate.
And so I thought the idea of somebody, there's either like a whole kind of like Pixar type story in that kind of thing where it's like, I mean, I think chameleon.
I like this. It's going to be cheap to animate.
Yeah, I mean, this is.
We just get the backgrounds done and we're pretty much
and then
set.
Have some voices or whatever, you know, a lot of inner monologue. Or it's a guy who's in camouflage, right? And he's, I was just going to say chameleon is too obvious. I think we need something else. Maybe one of those moths that hangs out on a tree and it's like the same texture as the bark or whatever.
Yeah, or an octopus. One of those moths that hangs out on an octopus.
Yeah, great. Or an octopus that hangs out in a bunch of moths. So they just blend in perfectly. I reckon a cuttlefish could do that.
Yeah.
Pardon me. But then it's got to start... But I mean, if you transfer it to a guy who's like, the way I've managed to survive this long in life is by wearing one of those, you know, one of those like military outfits where they look like you're a mound of grass.
Yeah.
You know how you see those everywhere, and they.
But now I'm struggling to reproduce.
I'm struggling to find a mate, because whilst this is keeping me safe.
I mean, is that a thing that?
It's not so much that I can't find a girl, is that they can't find me.
Is that a thing that would play out in an interesting way on an episode of Queer Eye? Like, I don't want to do a Queer Eye sketch just because it feels like those were all done when the first series of Queer Eye came around.
I know, but this is a different Queer Eye now, right?
It is a different Queer Eye, you're right. So the sketches will be totally different.
But it's different in a way that it tackles issues, like, much more obviously. I think, like... every episode seems to be kind of themed in that they're touching on a different type of toxic masculinity that they're like addressing, essentially.
Right, interesting.
Yeah.
I haven't watched enough episodes to...
Look, I've seen two, and one was with a woman and they didn't address any issues, really. No, it was kind of still an issue, but it felt like that was kind of what they were doing, like,
yeah, okay.
With this thing. So in this one, you know, there's obviously the masculine fear of that, or not fear, but the very, like the constant, the thinking about things in terms of violent attacks. This guy, you know, he's really taken that to the extreme, in that he doesn't ever want to get attacked, or really he doesn't want to attack, but he's ready to attack at any point. But I think putting it in a Queer Eye, I think, probably complexifies it more.
Yeah, and in fact, I think that the only really angle that I had in my mind on it was exactly that thing of, like, he's finding it difficult to connect or, you know, with people.
But then again, I was just thinking that this is actually a fun way of extracting a lot more of his story out, because then each guy who spends time with him is, like, they're both trying to just... tweak his fashion sense and his diet and stuff like that. enough so that he's more appealing to yeah. to
without
the world.
Without changing who he is.
Without changing who he is. So the food that they're getting him to make is something that he can make whilst crouching amongst the bushes. You know? And that still kind of blends in within his environment. So, you know, bags of like spinach and kind of rocket and if at this point maybe they, you know, seaweed, but you know, I mean maybe if this is set far enough in the future, maybe they will have discovered how to eat wood and that would be perfect.
This fast emerging is one of the key themes of the Two of the Think Tank.
Well, you know, I mean, it was a while wood. Since we had a theme.
Yeah.
You know, and eating wood, I feel like could be also a thing that ants like, because I think that would help them immensely. I know that some of them like leaves.
We haven't talked about things that ants like for a really long time, but I can absolutely confirm that ants love eating wood. When we got our new house, they'd eaten the whole back wall.
Really? Oh, yeah. They're white ants.
No, they were black ants. They'd just eaten all the wood. It was all rotten. And
is this a new thing that black ants eat wood?
It could be. Could be emerging.
But we could call it the ant diet. Could call it the ant diet.
Yeah. Or ants, they are very skinny.
Absolutely. Especially in like they've got
look at that figure. They've got that 1.5 hourglass figure.
38 microns. 1938. That's beautiful. Yeah. They actually have that snowman figure.
And they got that big ass.
Which is very in right now. Yeah.
the ant, like we haven't got that yet as a phenomenon. The ant ass, where your ass is almost like a totally separate thing that hangs off your body. When that comes in as a look.
Yeah, absolutely. I wonder if you almost, in order to get a bit more of an ant figure, you need like a neck corset.
I dare say your neck needs to be much thinner, much more cinched in. Your midsection needs to be as round as possible, and then we need a third bit, which will have to be like a prosthetic or a surgical addition of a huge swollen. Is that the abdomen? That bit at the back there, which would come off from sort of your tailbone area.
Yeah. I think you definitely need that bit. Get your legs real swollen. Maybe you can get it bitten by ants.
It could be your legs, but I think you want your legs to be as skinny as possible.
Oh, right. Yeah. Oh, so you just want like stuff to go beyond ass.
Yeah. Yeah. I want it coming out from there, and I want it out the back, like a big fat tail.
I mean, but wouldn't it be easier to just fuse your legs together and make them swollen and maybe inject them with a whole lot of sort of fat and things like that, and then just get...
But then you still need legs. Like,
yeah, I know, but then put in some extra stem legs.
How is this easier, Alistair? It doesn't seem easier at all. Well, you're always trying to get us to fuse our legs together for some reason.
Yeah, I know, but I'm just thinking, like, with technology, we're going to have some thin metals that can be probably mechanized. You know, like these little... you know, they've got these kind of like mech warrior type leg things that they're making so that they're, you know, you can add strength to the legs of soldiers.
And exoskeleton.
Yeah, exoskeletons. Just use those, but without having regular legs in there. Just fuse those to like your hips, right? Have them coming out on the side like that, right? And just put two fake legs in there, just like a dummy leg. Like just stuffed with like, you know, tissue paper and like,
old stockings or whatever.
Pillowcases and things like that.
Right. We have mechanized thin metal robotic legs and then just like some bits of cloth that are stuffed with newspaper.
Stuffed inside, yeah. And then I guess just your arms. And then I guess we walk on all fours.
Great.
Yeah.
All
sixes. Is that a sketch? Going for that ant look.
That ant look.
Mandibles? Antibodies. Mandibles or do you... Antibodies.
The antibody. Get yourself an antibody for summer. Mandibles, yeah? Mandibles?
I'm low on antibodies.
I think we had some kind of antibody pun in the show about a year and a half ago.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Due for another one. So yeah, I think ant bodies.
Ant bodies. How did we get into it? It was the ant diet. Is this for eating wood again?
Yeah, I think it was. But I think why there needs to be a better reason that's more connected to like body fashion and what's the good.
I guess it's like it's the extremity of it's that there's the butt love.
Yeah.
And then it's like, actually now it's full. Is it thorax? No, it's not thorax.
Thorax is the middle bit. I think it's abdomen.
Abdomen? Well, it feels like that's where the... Well, look.
Might just be thorax again.
Yeah.
Maybe thorax is... Anyway, we'll find out whatever that bit is.
Just the ant butt.
Ant butt, yeah.
The ant butt look, which is just, you know, the extreme of the... Mm-hmm. Of the... We're on the tail end.
Very
of
much.
Of the badonkadonk phase.
Yeah.
And these are the people who made the changes right before that wave, you know, had passed us.
Yeah.
And they made some really extreme makeovers.
Yeah. I'm into it. I think, ants also look great on the sand. It's sort of their natural habitat. So this could be a real beach look. This could be big for your beach
bod. Oh, absolutely. Or in desert.
Yeah, and desert.
Get your desert body ready.
Desert body.
I think that's something.
Your hive behind. No, it's not a hive, is it? Anyway, great. Have we done 5 sketch ideas?
Done 6 sketch ideas.
Do we have some words from a listener?
We do have some words from a listener. Andy, today's listener is a little guy you may know as Fred Rhodes.
Fred Rhodes.
Hello, Fred Rhodes. I hope that's how it's spelled. How it's pronounced.
I hope that's how it's spelled. Is that Fred with a P?
No, but it's Rhodes with an RH.
Yeah, great.
RH Odes.
Mm.
RH Odes is better. Mm-hmm. Sounds like you could be a novelist.
Yeah, RH Odes.
Yeah.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah. Capitalize that O.
I'd read his Skullfire series.
Oh, I thought you were going to end that skull F word differently.
Oh, well, that's why you can't leap to conclusions.
That's
right. You just wait until the end of my skull F word.
Speaking of leaping, one of his words is parkour.
Oh, great.
One of his other words is parquet.
Parkour, parquet?
And wait, P-A-R-Q-U-E-T, is that parquet?
Yeah. I assume that's a reference to parquetry, which is a type of flooring using short planks of wood to sort of tile the floor. And you get it a lot in like sort of ballrooms and that sort of thing.
That's clearly what it's a reference
to.
And Andy, this is, these are 3 P words.
Has this been sent in since last week where you struggled with 3 P words?
Yeah, look, sometimes 3 P words are 2 P words and an F word.
The subtle ways in which the listeners try to use these 3 words
to fuck with us. Look,
I really appreciate it.
It's quite subtle. It's sometimes I feel like my brain is maybe teaming up with the listeners now.
Yeah.
Anyway, the final P word is pourquoi.
Pourquoi? Question mark. Obviously for why.
Why? You know, if you break that, would break it down, it's for what? Pourquoi?
Pourquoi?
For what? Which is why.
Let's break them all down. Park. Hour.
Park
hour.
Park hour.
Park.
Park hour.
It. Park etiquette.
Oh, no, par, which is like part.
Mm.
Ket.
which is,
you know, the sort of a, it's quest minus an S. Okay.
I mean, look, I'm interested in because I think parquet makes me think a big open ballroom.
Yeah.
Right. And parkour makes me think like we're doing like just flat ground parkour.
Yeah.
You know, like parkour, what it is it's just, you know, it's up the wall, just jumping across gaps or something like that.
Yeah.
But I like the idea of parkour that just takes place on a totally flat ground. And now you might say you're just describing
running
gymnastics, right?
Oh, yeah.
The floor routine in gymnastics. Yeah. No, I'm not. No, because because this is parkour, and the difference is you're wearing a singlet.
Parkour is also known as
pants.
Free running. So this is, you know, it's you're running like your wife has just taken you in and taken the leash off of your collar.
Yeah.
And you're just going for around.
It's parkour, but without the obstacles.
It's like a dog park.
Mm.
But
for parkour, the kinds of people who would do parkour
and aren't allowed to do it in the house.
Yeah, and aren't confident with gaps, heights and
yeah.
Is this anything?
It's something. I mean, it's wild. I think
I just like it. We go in there. It's a big open gym, and it's like this is where
I think it's just a beautiful open. It's like it's a disused building. It's like it is a ballroom.
Yeah.
Right. So it's this beautiful old town hall, or I don't know what kind of buildings have ballrooms. Mm. What kind of buildings have ballrooms?
Town halls, government houses, palaces.
I don't think I've been in a single ballroom.
A single ballroom. Anyway.
A singles ballroom?
I was just thinking of a single ball.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Like Hitler had, apparently.
Yeah. Or a kid with one marble.
Okay. Yep.
One marble often have a single testicle.
Oh, do they?
Yeah.
Yeah. Is this anything?
Just flat ground.
Because there are things that we could bring into this idea. Like one of those ideas could be that it's almost like a ballroom dancing kind of a thing where people sort of stand around, right? And the people doing parkour are kind of dressed in quite spangly outfits. You know, we're talking sequins, etc. They've got numbers on their backs and they're just running around and sort of jumping and rolling and getting up.
It's kind of like one of those, you know, news reports where it's like, oh, here's the latest thing that people are doing.
Yeah.
And they're talking about, you know, like, because, you know, right now there's competitive, like, tag. You ever seen that? Where they've built, like, a room which has, like, obstacles and kind of, like, platforms and all these bars everywhere. And you just chase each other. And you get a point if you can evade the other person for, like, 20 seconds.
Wow.
Yeah? And it's just, like, all out just chasing. And the guy who's behind it is like, look, you know, in nature we're you know, fleeing and chasing is a big part that is no longer in our lives, and it's fun and it's activity and you know, it's intense exercise. And so it's kind of like that, but people are somehow justifying like flat. Well, you might think that parkour is all about leaping from tall buildings and rolling and things. But what about for the people who don't want to risk their lives? Well, Marcus here has been introduced a flat ground parkour in this local ballroom, and then you just see people just kind of running wildly, taking real sharp corners.
Yeah.
You know, because it's just like, it's supposed to be like creative running.
And then they sort of stop, and then they'll just do a 2 feet together jump.
Yeah, like that.
To just a different spot.
Then do a 180.
Yeah.
And then start running again. Maybe not even any rolling.
Yeah? No rolling?
I'm blocking the rolling. No, Andy, rolling is in. Rolling's in.
Thank God. Yeah, I like it a lot. Great. Right. Thank you very much, Rhodesy.
Yeah, thanks, Rhodesy. R.H. Odes. R.H. Odes.
Looking forward to the new Ice Stone novel that you've got coming up.
Absolutely.
In the Skullfire series.
Yeah, Blade of the North.
Yeah. Ice Stone: Blade of the North.
Yeah.
The new novel in this Skullfire quadrilogy.
Yeah, which obviously was a spin-off of the ancient archer's stone.
Yeah, in this one we follow the quest of Melchabeth as she seeks to avenge the death of her half-mother.
Rutabar Ganesha. the heir to the throne of the Helm's Crown.
Mm.
But you. Of the North Fun Toll people.
Great. All the pauses are part of the name. North Fun Tall People.
Yeah, they're a meditative humanoid.
I don't think enough pauses are included in language. I'm going to do a language where the pause is one of the like sounds. Like that clicking language. So did use pauses.
Did I tell you about, maybe I've already mentioned this on the pod, so stop me if I have.
But
I saw this, like, it was like one of those mini documentaries on Vice or something like that, where they were talking about some some ancient Spanish language from some island that was like, it's a whistling based language, right?
And these people not told me about
these people kind of like, you know, they put their finger in their mouth in some weird way, and it's apparently because it's quite a mountainous, spacious area.
Yeah.
And these people kind of go like. Like that, and they're
whistling from like one mountain to another, or something.
Yeah, and they're putting subtitles under it, and they're talking about how these people are keeping this language alive, and they're teaching the youth about it, right?
Yeah.
And watching this thing, I was like, "There's absolutely no way people are saying things, right? There's no way." And like, and I think there was at one point a line that made me like pretty sure that.
They weren't
saying things is because they go, it's kind of, like they say, it's based on the phonetics of like the Spanish language, even though the ancient one was based on some other.
Right, so they've reinvented it, sort of.
Yeah, and so I think that they're kind of going like, let's say they're saying, hey, come over here. They're going in some way like that. And I was like, wow, this is complete bullshit. And the people are not saying exactly what. Anyway, it made me think that there's a sketch in the idea of like, let's say some family that it lives in some really rural part of, you know, of the country. And these are the two sisters that are, they're keeping this language alive. But instead, you see them talking and they're doing a little documentary about them. And you see one's over at the other end and they're going, like that, but there's subtitles of what they're saying, and you just got them. It's like, you know, you got a narrator going, the sound that you're hearing is an ancient rural language here passed down through the generation. And then the subtitles are them having some, you know, just conversation. It could be deep.
Yeah, right? Yeah, great. And then I like it. We cut to the classroom where she's coming in. She comes in twice a week to teach us to the kids in the classroom on her own time, right?
Yeah, and I think all it is that we're building in a little story in there. Maybe like there ends up being a big fight between the two sisters.
Mm.
But all that is that we're getting to have people have an argument, but all they're going is.
Yeah.
Like that, and then you just put subtitles and have them saying things. Jesus Christ, you can't sleep with one of the students. We're going to get arrested. I didn't sleep with him.
I think the fact that you brought sleeping with the students into this is a real curveball. I love it, Alistair. Yeah. No, I think that's very funny. I think, like... It's funny just based on seeing people making these stupid noises.
Yeah.
And it's not like a genuinely like historical language as well. Like it goes back maybe like four generations in this one family.
Yeah.
But it's just they came up with it.
There was just like the one.
And it was like, it was a language that was developed because it was the only way to be heard at the dinner table when everyone else was having a conversation was to sort of screech in this high pitched voice over the top of the general hubbub.
That's right. And but, you know, it doesn't mean that the language isn't worth saving.
Isn't worth saving. You know, that's, isn't worth keeping
it's,
alive.
It's obviously adding to our cultural diversity in this world, and we can't let another language die.
That is interesting, isn't it, that just coming up with a new culture is adding to the cultural diversity in the world.
Absolutely.
As much as keeping alive some old one.
And you could have times where, like, moments where they're, you know, like shots where they're working with somebody from the government who works at the sound and film archive.
Yeah.
And they're recording this language before it disappears potentially. And so then they're going, that means car. That's portraying someone. That's cheese sticks.
Great. Al, do you want to take us through the sketches that we've come up with today on the podcast?
We've got the Stuff Happening rating. It's obviously
great.
It's a classic sketch format from Two in the Think Tank where you come up with a new government institute that does a thing.
That measures something.
That measures something new. Stuff happening. And it measures how much stuff is happening.
Yeah.
I guess, you know, it can localize it to a country, but it can also, it's really the aim is to measure the stuff happening in the universe and see whether or not if there's a steady state or whether, you know, is it increasing? Is it going down? Is it going to expand until the point where there's too much stuff happening?
Yeah.
Or was it going to reduce until to a point where there's not going to be enough happening anymore? That there's going to be too many people in the universe and not enough things happening?
Yeah, if we see the crossover point on the graph where it's like people who want to do things and things that are happening.
Yeah. And I guess then there's like then it goes deep into the studies of like what are things that make things happen and how can we produce more of those so that we don't get to this point.
We need to create the right conditions for things to happen.
Nothing's happening. Then we got the and then we want to kind of create like a place where Australia is this is the next sketch. It's where Australia has its own standard for an SI unit here in Australia, some kind of Australia Institute for, let's say, the fuck ton.
Yeah.
And we have this one standard fuck ton, you know, somewhere maybe out in Cobram, you know, maybe we could have it in Orange. You know, these inland cities need things to support, you know, local communities and so that the young people have something to do. And one of them is also the Museum of Interest, and they have the one standard unit of interest, which is Leonardo DiCaprio's age.
Exactly, which could also be an art installation. And then we have, while we're in Bathurst, we have the car race where you got to get the kids out of.
Well, that's right. That's the next sketch is the Bathurst Family Values Race, which is it's just the first sport that measures how good a time you're having.
Yeah.
Per second.
Yeah.
I mean, they average it up, but, you know, they'll also, it'll be really exciting to go through the graph at the end to see where they were having a really good time. Maybe a great song came on the radio,
We won't know whether or not you've been a success as a parent until we see your kids with their kids. You know,
because
I think
that's the
real test. It's like whether they've learned the skills to be, because ultimately you want your kids to be better parents than you were.
That's right.
You give them.
Absolutely. And then that'll be a real test of how good a parent they become. And you can only really tell how good a parent they become when their kids have grown up and they become parents.
Exactly.
Yeah. But also, yeah, so the idea is that it's a car race where you have to get. You start in the house, you got to get the kids into the car, then you start the race. You got to go as fast as possible whilst also having as good a time as possible.
Yeah.
Keeping the peace. Sometimes that can just mean keeping the peace.
Yeah, sure.
You know, it doesn't have to be a good time.
People don't have to be laughing constantly.
No.
If they are, there's probably something else going on beneath the surface.
There's probably some anxiety there.
Yeah, what are you masking?
Yeah. And also a good time with a family is not that different from a bad time.
That's true.
You know, it's good in a way that is not instantly enjoyable.
Sure. But there's a richness to it.
Like, I mean, right now I have you know, we're getting the kid to sit on the potty, you know, and it's a good time while he's going, "Watch me, watch me," like that, and we're just watching the urine come out into the toilet and then clapping.
Oh, so he needs the audience, does he?
He loves the audience. It's what it's about.
Oh.
We're making a healthy, well-rounded kid here.
Yeah.
A person who requires applause after they urinate. And I'm having a good time, not in the traditional
Alistair,
way.
We're raising kids who, when they stand up, applaud themselves.
Yeah.
So that's the sort of intrinsic motivation.
That's right, yeah. That... Well, if you can build self-satisfaction into their regular methods, then you're building kids that will, won't need other people. They won't need anyone.
Yeah.
Anyway, the next sketch is the determinist coach of a soccer team who just says, basically everything's going to happen the way it was always going to happen. So, go out and try the way you were always going to try.
I like that a lot.
Don't let what I say here affect what you're going to do because you can't.
Not that it could.
Camouflage man on Queer Eye. He's the guy who hangs out, but then is also looking for love. But the problem is that it's not so much that he can't find a woman. He sees them often. It's just they can't find him.
I reckon, if we were going to do with a Queer Eye sketch of that kind, which I don't know if we would, but I feel like we could come up with something that's much simpler.
Then a guy who hangs out in his camouflage. This is the best idea we've had in this episode.
Okay, great.
And it's an episode filled with pretty good ideas.
Okay, great. I was going to say, what about a goblin or something? Is that funny? A goblin.
Yeah, but then does it need to be like garden gnome eye? And it's these garden gnomes who are trying to help the goblin be more acceptable.
I think a garden gnome eye for absolutely anyone is funny. They always try to put you in one of those big pointy cloth caps. Don't forget your shovel.
Have you thought about growing a beard? Well, first
he's
of
very
all,
tall.
Your beard isn't
what if you? It's going to be difficult to work with someone who's more than a foot and a half high.
Yeah, and they find a way to just file your legs down.
Put you in a ditch or something.
Compress, like you would do with all the contents of a big computer tower. Mm. That you can get them in actually quite a small, thin little tower. They do that, but with your organs.
Wow.
And they get you into a smaller body, and they garden gnomify you. I'm going to write this down.
Garden gnomai. It's too much. It's too easy, to do
parody.
Yeah.
I know,
just because anything, you're like, ha-ha.
Yeah, I know, but if you... It's because it's too instantly funny.
Yeah.
You know, Andy, I think that all the inner voices that we have that stop us wanting to do easy comedy like that, and all the people who tell you that fart jokes and, piss and shit jokes and sex jokes and things like that and swearing are beneath you, are people who are telling you not to be a successful comedian.
That's what I want. Yeah. I want to be successful. I'm doing this.
All right, and we got the tail end of the badonkadonk phase, which is where people get those long ant, possibly ant thoraxes, maybe the other thing. We don't know yet. But, that big ant thing, you get your legs fused together, you get it puffed up. I mean, I don't know if you want to make it crispy like an ant.
So exciting.
Ants look like their exterior is crispy.
Yeah.
So maybe you want that. Then the next sketch is... but then also I think within that sketch, there needs to be the end of the badonkadonk phase happening not long after.
Yep.
And that now tight little tushes is what's in.
Then what happens to the people?
No ass. With no ass?
Yeah.
People who are always like, oh, you got no ass. That's what's going to be in. And then these people have these fake mechanical legs stuffed with pillowcases and stuff. And then
the big ant.
Yeah, and they're just so out of fashion. And they're standing alone in a nightclub on their hands and their mechanical legs, sipping a drink. No one's asking them to dance.
What have I done?
They're They're like twerking and making that huge thorax flung up and down. They're knocking drinks out of people with no asses hands.
Oh.
Anyway, it's gonna be great. It's gonna be a tragedy. We don't write enough tragedy.
Yeah, it's a real tragedy.
Then we got the flat ground parkour. Mm-hmm. This is just another dumb hit.
Just people running around. That's what it is. We came up with a sketch that is people running around.
It's essentially what you would get in a room of kindergarten students that you've allowed into the gym.
Yeah. Running around and not rolling.
If they roll, they get tasered.
No rolling.
Too dangerous. And then we got stupid noise language that goes back 40 years from some family trying to save it and keep it alive. And then we've got Gordon, not Gordon Gnome, but Garden Gnome Eye for the human guy. Along the watchtower. Thank you for listening to Tuna Think Tank. Hope the sound has been okay.
Yeah.
If it's not, look, it was a wild ride.
Yeah. We had a really good time. All things considered.
Yeah.
I hope you're considering all things, because I certainly.
I was considering all things and how many things were happening.
Have ever been.
Eh?
All things that have ever been.
And all things that will ever be.
The sum totality.
Yeah.
And we. Love. Like,
thanks. We're on Twitter. You can get us on Patreon.
Yep.
@2intank. You can donate if you want to support the program. You can also download the podcast onto people's phones for them while they're going into the bathroom.
Yep.
Force them to listen to it.
There have been some lovely reviews on iTunes recently.
Yeah, we get a lot of our self-value from those things. Thank you.
And we love you.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbroadcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.